We're especially glad that you're here. Always makes me feel bad to be a local when they say that, though. You know, glad I'm here. Especially glad the visitors are here. We're glad everybody's here. Glad Gina's here. 3 minutes late, but it don't even matter. I want you to turn. I want to direct your attention this morning to a passage in 2 Timothy chapter 4. 2 Timothy chapter 4. Paul, in writing his final words, makes an appeal to Timothy to come see him as quickly as possible. In fact, he says, this is 2 Timothy 4:13, if you're just walking in. "When you come," he said, "bring the cloak that I left with Carpus at Troas, also the books, and above all, the parchments." Parchments were expensive paper. Now, you can envision winter approaching, Paul being cold, not having people there to provide for him. He's already said in verse 11, "Only Luke is with me." Luke was a doctor. I'm glad that Luke was with Paul there towards the end. But then he says this, "And bring me the books." Now, we would like to know what those were, what books that Paul wanted, what were on the parchments that he wanted. We don't. But I'd like to think that of all the things that Paul might have wanted in his final hours were copies of the Scriptures. If Paul had the opportunity to have the Scriptures, and here we're talking about the Old Testament Scriptures, would they have offered him any encouragement in his final hours? You know, Paul himself once wrote the passage that I would always hear quoted when I was growing up, and I would knew it was going to be an Old Testament lesson, right? Romans 15:4. "The things written aforetime were written for our learning, but listen, so that we through patience and comfort of the Scriptures might have hope." Comfort. He's talking there about the Old Testament. If you'll read Romans 15:3, the verse directly preceding it, he's quoting from the book of Psalms. So he's referencing the Old Testament as being filled with comfort. The Old Testament as passages that give us hope. Now, this is what I want us to think about this morning, because I'm not always sure that we think about the Old Testament in that way. But how would you answer if someone said, "What do you think are the most encouraging passages in the Old Testament?" What if you were to sit down and you were to make a list? What if you, like Paul, were saying to a friend, "Bring me the parchments. These are the passages that I want to read in the darkest of hours." We might think about Psalm 23. We might think about Isaiah 53, but I'm going to think about some passages that maybe wouldn't be the first to come to our mind, but I do think are very encouraging. Old Testament passages. I call it the most encouraging. Your list would differ from mine, but I want to direct your attention to Genesis chapter 22. It's the first one that I have on my list. God's test of Abraham's faith. And you might ask, you know, why does God need to test somebody, right? When He knows, He knows everything already. Well, maybe He did it for more than just Abraham's sake. Maybe He did it for ours. Because this is actually a very encouraging passage when it's all said and done. Now, let's think about this. We won't go and read this entire narrative, but how long had Abraham and Sarah waited to have Isaac? You remember? It's 25 years, right? The promise came when Abraham was 75 and they didn't have Isaac until Abraham was 100. How precious was he to them? But God said to Abraham, if you're in Genesis 22, the first few verses, "Take your son, your only son, who you love, and offer him as a burnt offering to me." That makes me shudder to even think about it, much less, you know, Abraham actually having to hear it. Well, let me ask you this. How long was it between God's command and Abraham's journey? to the place that God commanded him to go. Do you remember? Remember how long it took to get there? 3 days. 3 days. Now, why do I say that? Well, who wants to dread that any longer than necessary, right? 3 days is plenty of time for Abraham to say, you know, I don't want to go through with this. 3 days' journey and talking to Isaac and thinking about what's coming. I've wondered, do you think Abraham slept much those nights when they're on their way to where he was headed? And then Isaac says, Dad, I see, you know, the wood and the fire. Where's the lamb? Where's the offering? What do you think that did to his daddy? And all the way, he knows he can't talk to him about it. This all is in Abraham's heart. And all that he says is, son, the Lord will provide. You know what transpires. But this is moving and even encouraging to me for these reasons. Number one, I'll tell you this why it's encouraging. God has never asked that of me. Certainly God has requirements for us, and He even requires us to make sacrifices for Him. But you tell me anything that compares to that in your life. So, you know, when we start maybe getting down on ourselves and thinking about the demands that are upon us, you just remember that God has never asked that much of us. And I find that encouraging. Number two, I find this encouraging. You don't have to understand everything, right, to still be able to trust in God. You know, sometimes trust is something that we give sparingly or only when we're convinced that somebody has earned it. And yet here is something I can't imagine that Abraham said, oh yeah, I get it. I understand. Yeah, that makes total sense. Come on, Isaac, let's head on out. Get the stuff. You know, no, I imagine that he would think, he's the promised son. Waited 25 years and longer because he's not a baby now. Isaac is, who knows how old he is, but he's not an infant. He's not even a little boy, right? Old enough certainly to talk. It was 25 years before that promise was fulfilled. And now this, it doesn't make any sense. But you don't have to understand everything about God's mind and God's purposes and the way He runs the world. You can trust Him even when you don't understand. And isn't that what faith is? The Hebrews writer said, by faith Abraham offered. And Job would say, though he slay me, yet will I what? Trust Him. And it's encouraging because in our own lives, we're going to inevitably experience times of confusion. But we can trust God. And then number three, this passage encourages me because of what happens. You know, we're all relieved with Abraham, right? When the angel of the Lord stops him and says, Abraham, Abraham, stop, stay your hand. Well, as he raised the knife and God says, don't do him any harm. The place where they were became a memorial. It became a monument. And what was the name of it? Do you remember what the name meant? The Lord will provide. That's encouraging, isn't it? The Lord is going to take care of you. You can't even see it coming. You didn't even know that it was going to happen. So often when we just can't see through the fog and the darkness and the confusion, listen, the Lord is going to take care of you. As we read in Hebrews chapter 11, which is in fact a quotation from the Old Testament, I will never leave you and I will never forsake you. Don't even start thinking otherwise. Turn over to Deuteronomy 32. I want to mention another passage. Actually, two passages kind of put together are next on my list. Deuteronomy 32, 48 to 52, the last paragraph there in the chapter, Deuteronomy 32. And then Deuteronomy 34, verses 1 to 8. We're talking about the death of Moses. You say, wow, that's encouraging. Can't wait to hear more of your list. So far, you've had Abraham offering Isaac. You've got now Moses. Why am I giving the death of Moses as an example? Well, in Deuteronomy 32, the last part, we have God's reminder to Moses. This is what's going to be required. Moses, you're going to die. You're going to go on top of Mount Nebo and you're going to die because you disobeyed me in the matter in the wilderness. You remember what Moses did. And then in chapter 34, we have the few historical details relative to Moses' death. And so God, look at 48 to 52. We won't read it, but God is reminding Moses of the consequence of his sin. Moses is one of the greatest characters in all the Old Testament, but there's still consequences for his sin. And God tells him that. He reminds him, you disobeyed me in the wilderness. And then in chapter 34, we have what God told him. It was inevitable. And then this transpires. Flip over to 34, chapter 34, and look at verse 4. Moses goes up to Nebo, and he dies there. We're told that the Lord buried him, and no man knows the place of his burial to this day. Why, of all passages, does this come to my mind as saying this is encouraging? You know, Moses knows for some time, you're not going into the land. You're not going to go into the promised land. There were multiple times, though, when Moses said to God, now, God, can we revisit that? Can we think about that again? And God finally had to tell Moses, Moses, don't bring this up anymore. Don't mention it to me again. Well, I said that to say, what was Moses' interest level about going to the promised land? How badly did he want to go? Well, it was extreme. Moses wanted to go to the promised land with all his heart. I think that's fair to say. The Bible says that he begged God to be able to go. But God said, no, don't bring this up anymore. What's encouraging, though, why I have this on my list, is that Moses didn't say, all right, fine. If that's the way you're going to be, if I can't have, now think about this, if I can't have some of your mercy and your compassion after all that you've put up with from these people, and I can't have some of that same mercy that you've lavished upon them, and you won't let me go in, you find somebody else to lead them in. No. Moses obeyed God every step of the way thereafter, knowing there was nothing in it for him. Everybody else gets to go. But he was going to keep serving God anyway. That's encouraging. That's encouraging that Moses had the insight to say, look, I don't agree with God on this. You know, I want to go in more than anything. But God said no. And you know what? He's still worthy of my worship. He is still worthy of my service. He's still worthy of my obedience. And I'm going to serve him. Moses is not getting what he wants, but it doesn't matter. He's still going to be obedient to God and do what? Go up on that mountain and die. Go up on that mountain and die. Every step of the way, walking up Mount Nebo, he's one step closer, and he knew that he was one step closer to his death. But he was going to do what God said. And we should be like that. We are going to obey God no matter what. But you know what? What I really find encouraging is what Moses learned. What did he learn? Moses learned that the promised land is not really the promised land, right? Because Moses got to go somewhere far greater, did he not? And it's like, oh, well, This isn't so bad after all. When his eyes were opened, as ours will be one day in a way that we can't even comprehend. It is always, always important to obey God in view of what's coming, right? Even when we don't understand, even when we do not get what we think we should have gotten, always important to obey God. And I find that a fascinating passage, thinking about Moses' experience. Well, let me give you another one. I think this has got to be on the list. Turn to 1 Samuel 17. This one's got death too, though. It's three in a row. David and Goliath. I'm morbid. I don't know what else to say. What was David doing down there? Do you remember why David was even down there to begin with? His three older brothers were in Saul's army. They were on one side of the valley. The Philistines were on the other. And here comes this guy out, 40 days in a row. And the Bible is very clear that the Israelites were terrified. I mean, who wouldn't be when this giant comes out? According to the standard calculations, he's 9 feet, 9 inches tall. I'm sure his driver's license said he was probably, 9'10", 9'11". It's 9'9", I think. And he's huge. I read something the other day about Andre the Giant. He was 7'4". This guy's 2.5 feet taller, I guess, than Andre the Giant. But he's defying the God of Israel. He's ridiculing. He's making fun. Well, why does David go down there? Well, his three older brothers were there. And Jesse, their daddy, their father, was wondering, what's going on down there? How are they doing? The place where his brothers were did not have cell service. The internet was down. And so he sent the brother. He sent David to go and check on the older brother. So he's concerned. Jesse sends food to the men, to the commanders. And he says, let me know what's going on. Now, when David gets there, and the timing of this matter, I think, is fascinating. Guess what's going on when David shows up? This daily routine of the giant Goliath coming out. And David finds his brothers. And his brothers, now remember David's the little brother, his brothers say, where did you leave those few sheep? Aren't you supposed to be somewhere else, little brother? You're in a man's world, boy. What are you doing here? And David is incensed. Why? Because God is insulted, and nobody in all of Israel said, I'll fight him. I'm not going to tolerate this. Now, we know what happens. David accepts the challenge, and he meets Saul. They put Saul's armor on him, but it doesn't fit. And David just says, I'll go out with my staff and my rocks and my sling. Look at verse 32 if you're in 1 Samuel 17. David said to Saul, let no man's heart fail because of him. Your servant will go and fight with this Philistine. Now, can you imagine? Here's this 17-year-old boy telling the king with all of his soldiers, don't let anybody lose heart because of him. I'm going to go take care of him. And then Saul said to David, you're not able. You're not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him, for you are but a youth, David, and he has been a man of war. He's been a warrior from his youth. But David explained how he had, in keeping the sheep, been attacked by bears and lions, and how he had been successful in those engagements because God had been with him. Look at verse 37. And David said, the Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and the paw of the bear, he will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine. So David chose for himself 5 smooth stones from the brook. Then he put them into his shepherd's bag, and his sling was in his hand, and he approached the Philistine. Now you know how this is going to end, but it's still good, isn't it? Drop down, look at verse 42. When the Philistine looked and saw David, he disdained him, for he was but a youth and ruddy and handsome in appearance. And the Philistine said to David, am I a dog that you come to me with sticks? And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. The Philistines said to David, "Come on, you come to me, and I will give your flesh this day to the birds of the air and to the beast of the field." Now notice, mark verse 45, put it on a post-it note on your mirror, on your fridge, somewhere where you can see it. Because think about what he said. He says, "Am I a dog that you come to me with a stick?" And David says to him in verse 45, "Look at you. You come to me with a sword and a spear and a javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whose name you have taunted. This day the Lord is going to deliver me, you, into my hands, and I will strike you down, and I will cut off your head. And I will give the dead bodies of the armies of the Philistines this day to the birds of the sky and to the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel." Is that not awesome? And you got to remember, this is a young boy. This is a young boy. And he says, "You come to me with all this armor. I come to you in the name of God, and I will cut your head off." And that's exactly what happens. "And you will know that there is a God in Israel." You know, I think that's pretty well self-explanatory as to why this is an encouraging Old Testament text. But when you think about it, there's really a couple of things that make this very encouraging. Number one, David had never done this before, right? That's what faith is. Right? Faith is trusting in God. I've never been through, think about in your own life, you haven't cut off the head of a giant, I would assume, but you faced your own giants, and if you haven't, you will. And isn't that what faith is? I've never been through this before. What I'm about to go through or what I'm going through now, I've never been through it before. But I know who God is. And I know that God will be with me. I know that, and you know that too. That's what faith is. It's trusting in God. But here's something that I think is exceedingly encouraging. Listen, great faith acts alone if necessary. David went on to have great influence in the kingdom, so to say, did he not? But it all traces back, if you think about it, to this event when he's 17 years old. Sometimes people want to get that backwards, right? Great faith comes first. Great influence comes later. Sometimes people want great influence, but they don't have great faith. David had great faith, but great faith will act alone if that's what it takes. Nobody stepped forward with David. But David didn't need anybody to. Why? Because David had the Lord. And so I wonder, I really do, I wonder if in the dark hours of Paul's life, when he's in that prison, if he wouldn't turn over to 1 Samuel 17 and say, "I want to read that again, and I want to think about it. God is with us, and I have nothing to fear from that evil Nero, and I don't really have anything to fear from these Romans. If anything, I'm just going to heaven." God will be with us. And that's encouraging. I want you to turn to the book of Habakkuk. Habakkuk is very interesting because, you know, with most of the prophets, they get a message from God and then they take it to the people. Well, Habakkuk is different from that because Habakkuk goes to God, right? Habakkuk goes to God with questions and problems and confusion. So he goes to God and he's disturbed that God seems to be kind of on the sidelines so far as justice is concerned, and he sees all the problems going on. All of the people are hurting. And Habakkuk says, "God, how can you let this stuff go on?" And what's God's response? God's response is, oh, I'm not ignoring what's going on. In fact, the day is coming, the patience of God is going to wear out, and it's going to be inevitable that God, who always does what is right, will bring judgment on the people who are committing these sins. But he says this to Habakkuk, and this just blows his mind. He says, I'm going to give you some insight, Habakkuk, into what's going to happen. I'm going to bring the Babylonians to punish the people. And Habakkuk, to punish what people? The Israelites. Right? And Habakkuk chokes on that. And he says, what? He says, the Babylonians, those people are worse than we are. He says, now I'm more confused than before we even had this conversation. And God begins to lay out some things for Habakkuk to think about, one of which is quoted many times in the New Testament. It's quoted in Romans 1:17, the just shall live by faith. You know, we don't always understand, and we certainly don't have the insight that God does, but you are going to be saved ultimately if you believe and you trust in God. So after all of this, and Habakkuk kind of goes through this spiritual process of, you know, wondering why God doesn't act, where is God in all of this, and then he hears news that even makes less sense to him. But he finally resolves to say this, you know what? You know what? I just need to trust in God. God is going to do what's right. That doesn't mean, does it? That doesn't mean that I'm going to be spared pain and suffering in this life, but I can trust in God. And I think this comes out in one of the most powerful personal testimonies from a Bible character about his own faith that you'll read anywhere. And that's what this is. Look at verse 16. This is what Habakkuk is now saying for himself. And I hope that we have that same feeling as well. Look at Habakkuk 3:16. He said, I heard and my inward parts trembled. He heard what? The prophecy about the Babylonian captivity, the destruction. And he says, that makes me sick at my stomach, if you'll let me, you know, paraphrase. I want you to think about you living in Jerusalem and hearing the news that he had heard. These people are coming. And how do they treat people? There's no Geneva Convention, right? Nothing like that. These are ruthless, godless people. At the sound of this, he said, my lips quivered. Decay entered my bones, and in my place I trembled, because I must wait quietly for the day of distress. So, he's a good man, like Daniel. Some of the others, they were caught up in this nation that was largely ungodly. And now God's going to punish them. But even though they're being punished, they're still good people living in this land. And he's sick about that. These good people are going to have to suffer too, along with the wicked. Now here's his statement of faith. It starts in verse 17. You ought to draw a box. You ought to draw a box around 17 through 19. Habakkuk says, though the fig tree should not blossom, and there be no fruit on the vines, though the yield of the olive fail, and the fields produce no food, though the flock should be cut off from the fold, and there be no cattle in the stalls, yet I will rejoice in the Lord. I will rejoice in the God of my salvation. The Lord God is my strength. He's made my feet like deer's feet. He makes me to walk on the high places. Let me simplify that. If we're starving, that's what he says. If we're starving, though all of these things fail, we get invaded, we're besieged, we're taken over, and if the fig tree should not blossom, which means what? We're not going to have anything to eat. There's not going to be any figs on the tree, no fruit on the vines, no olives, no oil. The fields are not going to yield any grain, no livestock, no cattle, no meat. Can you say that? Can you say that? If I get so destitute that I literally starve to death, I will rejoice in the God of my salvation. I think so many times, what I would be thinking, we would probably be thinking, well, God has abandoned me. Tell you what, God has left me out to dry. But no, Habakkuk says, I've come to realize something. There, and isn't this true? There are a lot of things about this world that I don't understand. But I know this. I know one thing. I can trust in God. I can trust Him. And this is coming from someone who is not talking in hypotheticals. Easy to do that. No, he's on the verge of living through one of the most horrific periods in the history of Jerusalem. And he says, it doesn't matter. I will rejoice in the Lord. Didn't Jesus Christ have that same resolve? And aren't we glad that Jesus saw it through to the bitter end and did not stop short of securing our salvation? And how can we do any less? But no matter what happens, no matter how confused, no matter how uncertain things seem, God is worthy of our worship. He's worthy of our praise. He's worthy of our trust. Someone once said this, some people think they need faith as big as a mountain in order to move a mustard seed. Well, they're kind of getting the Lord's statement backwards there, aren't they? And I think sometimes we need this, and this is the last passage I'll share with you. We need the encouragement of Elijah. Turn to 2 Kings chapter 6. And think about all that we're omitting this morning. I mean, we're not talking about Daniel. Daniel who refused to defile himself with the king's food. Daniel who would not bow Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And then fiery furnace and then being thrown to the lions. I mean, there's so many. Daniel who kept on praying when they said, look, if he bows down and prays, he's going to pay for it. Don't you know so many people would say, well, Daniel would always open his window, right? Face toward the temple, and he would pray. And don't you know that here's this decree, if you keep opening your window, if you keep praying like that, then you're going to lose your life. Don't you know so many of us would say, well, I'll just pray to myself. There's no need really to open my windows anyway, and I don't want to, risk things. I'll just pray to myself. Not what he did. It's not what he did at all. But that's not what we're even talking about. 2 Kings 6. Remember when the servant comes to Elijah early one morning and he's learned that the Syrians had surrounded the city and they were about to be destroyed. Their destruction seemed imminent. And Elijah simply said to his servant, don't be afraid. Don't be afraid. 2 Kings 6:16. One of my favorites. Don't be afraid. Why? Those who are with us are more than those who are with them. And he said, paraphrase, what are you talking about? Right? It's just you and me here, right? And we're surrounded, and here you are saying those that are with us are more than those that are with them. It's just me and you. Just two, last time I checked. Notice verse 17. Elijah prayed and said, Lord, open his eyes. And he looked around, and surrounding the army that was surrounding them were heavenly hosts in flaming fire. Makes the hair on the back of my neck stand up. Wish Elijah was here today. We're facing difficult times, and we think we're outnumbered, and we think things aren't going the way we had hoped, and we don't see how this possibly end well. Lord, open his eyes. One day our eyes are going to be opened. Right? Open his eyes. Look, it was there all along. He just didn't see it, couldn't see it. That's how it's going to be for us one day. Right? That's what we have to remember. Those who are with us. God being with us always means that we're in the majority, right? And we can trust and serve Him no matter what. And those are some of my most encouraging passages. Have you thought of some? Trying to sit down. I think so many times with the Old Testament, it's those 39 books that we just don't spend a whole lot of time in. We're in the New Testament. We don't live under the old law, right? I appreciate that. But I think sometimes what we forget is that we're not under the old law, Colossians 2:14, but there are still eternal principles and eternal truths that are true today as they ever were, and we still profit from that. Those are the Scriptures Paul meant when he said the things written aforetime. We learn from them still. We get comfort from them. The Old Testament, hope from the Old Testament. And I hope that you will not just make a list, right? But I hope that you, like Paul, will gain strength from revisiting the Scriptures. Yes, the Old Testament Scriptures, because they were written for our instruction so we can have endurance, so we can have encouragement, and so, friends, we can have hope. Paul is on the verge of being executed, and he says, "Bring me the Scriptures." Well, thank you this morning for being here, for being in this Bible study. That in and of itself is an encouragement to us all. We'll stand dismissed. We're ending a little bit early, but we'll stand dismissed until Bible class hour is over. Thank you.